Stay a while. Stay forever.
Hello, I'm Rob.
And I'm also Rob.
And welcome to Marmalade, the Geek Show's monthly look back at the games we've been playing, you know, whatever they might be.
He does intros well, so well.
Well, literally, that's what Marmalade is. It's just basically, I mean, we chose the name Marmalade because obviously there are gaming jams all over the place, and we thought, well, Marmalade is also a thing, and we like Marmalade, or I like Marmalade.
Because you're an old woman. I think I'll jump in first.
Yeah.
Because we had a month off last month because, you know,
yeah,
it doesn't make sense to do this every month when maybe you haven't had the time to play stuff. Yes, so the first one I want to talk about, not going to take a long time, honestly, because not a great deal to say about it. And you think, well, actually, this is one of these things where I'm going to say, I'm not going to talk about it for long, and then I'm not going to say much about it, and then 20 minutes later, I'm still talking about it. Always happens. But it's the 2016 remake of Ratchet & Clank, which I got as part of the Play at Home initiative, which PlayStation are currently running. I think it's like 10 games between Ratchet & Clank, Horizon Zero Dawn, Complete, and a lot of indies. One, I want to play Subnautica out of those indies, so I'll talk about that in a future episode. But yeah, Ratchet & Clank 2016 was the first one. And there's a very big divide in this game. I think it's actually the Ratchet & Clank which made me not give an absolute rat's ass about Ratchet & Clank anymore.
Really?
Yeah.
One thing I know about Rob is that there are certain games which he is an absolute diehard fan of. Ratchet & Clank was always one of them.
I've played pretty much most of them.
Yeah.
The reason for it is, I know this was sort of released as part of their failed attempt to make a Ratchet & Clank animated sort of Pixar kids movie. So the animation on everything is gorgeous, especially now on the PlayStation 5. Now it's got that 60 frames per second hoo-ha.
Yeah.
But it plays beautifully.
Mm.
But at the same time, it plays exactly the same as Ratchet & Clank has always played. I know that it's okay having that sort of familiarity.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I don't know, it just comes to a point when you think, I don't want to play the next Ratchet & Clank because I fit outside of the sort of the dimension pulling stuff. I feel like I've already played it, you know. And this was the game where it really sank in that revelation.
Okay, yeah, I get it.
And also, the story, the dialogue, the delivery is awful. Oh my God. It's like worst I've seen in years awful.
Is this one of those games where it was subject to a certain degree of interference from higher-ups who believe they know better?
I don't know about that, but essentially, the whole point of Ratchet & Clank series is that through the run of the series, Ratchet & Clank become best buds.
Yeah.
You know how it happens in this? Ratchet calls Clank buddy and then the best friends now.
That's not how it happened in the original one.
And it's really awkward. It's like, you just met him and you're best friends and all you do is call him buddy. And it's like, what the hell's going on here? This is so... This is basically, right, they've took the script and then they took all the pages out and then left it. All they've got left is the bits with Captain Quark.
Please, sir, I have a question. Just how lonely was Ratchet that he immediately made Clank his best bud upon meeting him?
I don't know. And honestly, I think... You don't learn that Clank is a defect warbot until a good few games in. And in this, you immediately know the first time you see him, he's in a warbot factory and he's running away from a big warbot. It's just that, all over the place. I mean, I'm not going to be one of those people who sort of goes, oh, but that's not how it happened. I'm basically like one step off release the Snyder Cut people there. But at the same time, it's just, it condenses so much story into such a small space and basically removes all of the detail of anything. I mean, so everybody's a cardboard cutout. I know it's a cartoon, so you'd effectively, cartoon characters, you have this idea that cartoon characters are like kiddie cutouts. But in this, they really are cutouts.
See, I don't have that idea, but then again, I watch a lot more animation than the majority of people on the planet. Do you know what this sounds like? Remember those Hollywood remakes of classic movies, real dyed-in-the-wool classics that for some reason they decided to do a modern version of, the modern version of Get Carter, for example.
Oh, yeah, they did that. Then it was Sylvester Stallone, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, that lacked any of the panache and any of the grit of the original Get Carter. And then, what was it? They did the modern version of Alfie with Jude Law, which lacked any of the charm or charisma of the original version. And I know I picked two Michael Caine movies there, but they didn't want to remake his entire...
Yeah, but honestly, it plays beautifully. It's soulless. It's so soulless. And that, I mean, it'd have to pretty much make Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart a timeless masterpiece for me to give a damn at this point. And as even being a fan of Ratchet and Clank, I'd never call any of them a timeless masterpiece.
Yeah.
I think this one kind of broke my back as far as this. I'm a camel, and this one broke me back.
It kind of sounds like what they did with Spyro. Remember when they did the new version of Spyro on the PlayStation 2. I think it was Spyro New Beginning. It was all right, but it wasn't a patch on the original PlayStation Spyro games. And then they didn't actually up their game until the second game, which I think was Day of the Dragon.
Yeah, I mean, this is like, it's a game without any substance.
Yeah.
And this game really sort of laid bare the dynamics of what makes a Ratchet and Clank game.
Mm.
Plonk them on some new planets, different funky weapons, that's it. And I know that's effectively what they've all been, but it's that soul, that substance that makes them worth playing. And when you remove the substance, you realise what you're actually been playing all this time.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? I've got a bit lofty and I've talked about this for longer than I wanted to, but you know.
No, I get it. Okay, I'm going to relate it back to movies for a second, right? And I know you're not a fan of the franchise, but I am, so I'm relating it to that. The Lethal Weapon movies. Yes, I know Mel Gibson is a bit of a, whatever you want to call him.
He's a bit of a Mel Gibson, Rob.
Yeah, he's a bit of a Mel Gibson. The movies themselves were actually a lot of fun. The first one was kind of action with a little bit of comedy in, but then they got more and more comedic as they went along, and it was more about the relationship between Riggs and Murtaugh, and, you know, Riggs is basically being an extended part of Murtaugh's family and then eventually getting his own family. And it was about that dynamic between the two of them, how the two of them ended up as this, like this old married couple who could, you know, finish each other's sentences. And that's how I've always envisioned something like Ratchet and Clank or, Jack and Daxter and stuff like that, where you have these two characters and they're basically in a really close buddy relationship and they rely on each other, but they basically tease each other and take the piss out of each other.
Yeah, the relationship grows over the games, and this is just, we're best buds now. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, and there's no effort in that.
No, there isn't. It looks gorgeous.
Yeah.
It is as well as ever, but when you get the substance removed, it's really kind of sad what's left over.
That's a shame.
Pick it up from that downer, eh? Pick it up.
I am going to pick it up from that downer because I finally, right? And this is a game that I've been basically planning, meaning to play for, 7 years? Came out in 2013. Came out late 2013 on the PlayStation 3 and I think the Vita as well. And it came out on the PlayStation 4 more recently. But I've been waiting to play Doki Doki Universe for a long, long time and I never got around to it. I always meant to play it and always forgot and always meant to play it and always forgot. And it just kept going like that and I kept forgetting. Because I really liked the look of Doki Doki Universe, and I really liked, you know, the trailer for it. I'll be honest,
and I know this kind of undermines my point when I say on the video will have the gameplay playing, and me saying, I don't know what it is, makes me sound like an idiot, but we don't have the footage here as we're recording this, so I'm going to ask it anyway. What is it? I've never heard of it, I'll be honest.
Right. See, this is the thing. Doki Doki Universe, it's a very, very strange game about what it means to be human and about human relationships and kind of, right, in a sense, Doki Doki Universe is a personality quiz, a personality test made into a video game, kind of, right? It's a game all about side quests, effectively, right? And within you those side quests.
You should never be a PR guy for video games. You are not selling this.
And the thing is, it's a bizarre game to try and explain, right? You play as a robot called QT3, right? And you have been told that unless you can figure out what it means to be human, you're going to be reprogrammed. And you've been told this by this alien. Basically, you've been abandoned by your parents and you've been given this mission, and this alien is basically helping you go from planet to planet. And on these planets, you're basically helping the characters that you meet on these planets, human and otherwise. You're helping them with little odd jobs, and you basically can create pretty much anything you can imagine. And I will use that term very loosely, right? Within the boundaries of the game, you can create anything that you imagine to basically help these people. So somebody who's feeling cold, you can basically give them, you know, a match or a fire or a burning building to help them keep warm. There are options there. But the ultimate upshot, it's repetitive as hell, right? It really is repetitive as hell. And you notice that pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And that is one of the things why I kind of went off the game a little bit. But when I went back to it, because I played it, and then I started thinking, this is just repetitions and repetitions and repetitions. But I may have been a bit, you know, a bit tired on the day that I played it. And then when I went back to play it, to continue playing it, I thought, this is actually better than I thought. Because I started getting more into it and more into the personality side of things. Because I started doing personality tests and I started... And surprisingly, they were reasonably accurate. Sometimes they were wildly different to, you know, how I know I am. But the rest of it was actually pretty close.
Okay.
You frame all of that within a game where you meet interesting characters, it has an interesting art style, and you learn more about... you know, more about human nature and more about yourself within the frame of a game where you basically just go around doing random stuff for people, right? And I kind of love it for that. It's like somebody at some point, you know, from the developers, I don't know how they've managed to do this, but they had this weird idea of, say, you know, what would be fun in a game, a personality test. You know, let's mix that with some human philosophy and let's make a game out of it. And like,
is there something weird in this water?
Yeah, that's exactly it. Are you smoking something? Was there something in those cupcakes? And like, no, it can really work. And it really does. I mean, yeah, like I said, it's repetitive as hell. And,
and it's about philosophy, that's not helping dissuade the ideas that it was done by someone who were off the guard. They were completely off their guard when they made this.
See, that's the thing. It shouldn't work. It shouldn't work.
And I mean, you've not said anything that convinces me that it does work, honestly.
It does, because it's got... Right. The characters and the art style have their own charm and uniqueness, and, your interactions with the characters are actually pretty interesting, and that's what makes the game continue to take over. I mean, when I say repetitive, you basically go from one planet to another just basically doing the same stuff over and over again. You know, odd jobs for random people. And, you know, maybe they're fetch quests, maybe they're helping people do whatever. Don't matter. Because at the end of the day, and I think part of the reason why I kind of love it is because we're coming on the back of all these lockdowns. And I think Doki Doki Universe is one of those games where it is the perfect game to play during lockdown, because it's got that sense of human interaction to it. So that's, which is,
it's basically the video game equivalent of me sitting for hours watching Ramblack videos.
Yeah, basically. Basically, if you're lacking human contact, if from the lockdown, and you know you're missing going out with your friends, Doki Doki Universe is kind of the perfect game for that scenario. I can't really say more about it. I mean, I think I played it at the perfect time for me to play it. I think if I played it at any other time, I don't think I would have enjoyed it as much as I did this time.
Yeah, that's fine. Right, moving on. You want me to have a positive opinion of a video game? Move over, sister. Not this week.
Not this month, even.
Not this month. Right. Number two is a game which I was... looking forward to from the second it was announced, really. It's a Polish game based in a version of alternative European history in which World War II didn't end when it was supposed to, and it lasted longer and made a bit of a wasteland out of mainland Europe. That game is Paradise Lost. Now, when I first saw it, I thought, ooh, this looks interesting. It looks like it could have some sort of survival horror-esque like, vibe to it as you sort of wander through the embers of a broken Europe.
Yeah, I have to ask, does it bear any relation to the poem?
Not having read the poem, being an uneducated Philistine like I am, I couldn't possibly say, Rob. So for the sake of safety, I'm just going to say yes.
I mean, the poem was done in 1674 by John Milton, so, you know, I don't think it did.
There was wars around then, Rob.
There was.
Plenty of wars. But yeah, anyway, you got me confused now. Paradise Lost. What it is a walking simulator. A walking simulator in which you play a young lad who goes through this huge bunker. Absolutely huge. And all he's got in his pocket is a picture with his recently deceased mum and a man in an area with a number 4 on it. And you've got to go through this huge bunker. And I don't mean like a little huge bunker, like, you know, it's got like maybe a tuck shop or something in it. I mean, huge bunker as in it's effectively a small town in a bunker. And you go from area to area to area to area. And in the second area of the 4, you meet a young... Well, you don't meet. You interact with a voice, a disembodied voice. And around that time, it also starts introducing title cards. Like, title cards that go through, like, the stages of grief. Like, anger and bargaining is what I've been through so far. And looking at the trophies, is also acceptance and other things. So, yeah, it's gone through the 7 stages. I think it was 7 stages.
Something like that, yeah.
Of grief. But honestly, I don't know. I'm kind of done with walking simulators. Because what this entails is lots of... Because you can't run and you think... And you've been programmed by games that you, you know, run through everywhere when it's taken a long time. And he has sort of walking, like, chipper amble.
I heard you say about Chipper Amble sounds like an American sports commentator.
It does, doesn't it? It's such an American name. But yeah, it's lots of walking through empty places. And don't get me wrong, what the thing that really works for walking simulators is the fact that you get to luxuriate in the world design and the world building and tell stories through what's happening in the world. And it does some good stuff there. But it also likes something interesting to do.
Yeah.
Walking simulators, I think, get a pass when they do something fantastical. Everybody's going to the Rapture does something really interesting. Firewatch, What Remains of Edith Finch. These are like walking simulator games in which you are put in a situation which provides you with some weird moments to really get lost in. Whereas in Paradise Lost, it's good if you're into sort of alternative European history, because effectively, the entire bunker is vacated. There's trains, there's suitcases that have been left. So something has happened. Something has got rid of all of the people. But at the same time, you're just walking through nothing.
See, that sort of thing, it would have been nice if you could actually, if rather than a walking simulator, it was more of an exploration simulator. So you could
Open stuff. You can look at make pieces of paper would tell you.
Yeah, but stories. That's all.
There's a few audio things that you interact with.
But that's all like on rails from the game, though, isn't it?
To an extent, yeah.
And what I'm talking about is more of an open world exploration thing where you can basically, you know, you're in the. So imagine the scenario instead. You're in the bunker, and okay, maybe you encounter the disembodied voice at times. But the rest of it is just basically you're able to open everything, you're able to read everything, and I know there'll be a lot of work involved in that, but you have total freedom to go wherever you want and read whatever you want, interact with whatever you want, you know?
Honestly, you know what I think would have been better for it?
If it Wolfenstein. Was a point...
No, no. Although there is a bit where you walk past guns and thought, why can't I pick these up? And... He's a kid. Nobody's going to tell him off.
Yeah.
And on that note, he put everything back sort of perfect and neat. Ooh, I don't want to upset anybody that might find this random piece of paper that I found in his dead vacated bunker. And the same bloody climbing animation, time and time and time again. Get quicker at climbing, doofus. It's so frustrating and sort of slow. But I think it's just me in walking simulators. We're not really... I'm a square hole, that's a round peg.
Yeah. It's historical fantasy, kind of. And it does seem to echo Wolfenstein a little bit. The new Wolfenstein games, that is.
The new Wolfenstein is very much in the fantasy of cybernetic dogs and cyber bodies and all these weird things. Whereas this is sort of science, World War Fantasy in the sense of the war didn't end when it was supposed to.
Is it more steampunk than anything else?
No. It's completely based in real life.
All right, okay.
It's very much the sort of fantasy where it just asks the question, what if the World War didn't end in 1945?
All right, okay.
What would happen to Poland? But at the end of the day, I think it's just that point. Walking simulators, I think they need to be a little bit more fantastical to actually be compelling.
Yeah.
There was other ways to tell this story. I mean, don't get me wrong, the world design is great. The voice acting is strong. It sets up like a nice little mystery, but it's just walking and walking and walking. You need to do it in a very, very varied set of circumstances and a very varied set of places for that to really be compelling. Just to go through a bunker from zone to zone to zone, isn't that?
Would this have been better off as a VR game? As a VR experience, I should say.
It would have been a bit better. A bit shorter, yeah. A shorter version of this as a VR game, I think, would have worked better for what it is.
Okay.
Pick up the mood from that. In fact, my last one's pretty down as well. Yeah. So hopefully you have three up games.
Kind of don't, but since your last one is a downer as well, I'll save the one I was going to do till last. And instead, I'll talk about Tales of the Neon Sea. This is, you know, available already on PC. It came out in 2019. And it's a bit of a throwback, this game. You play as Rex, who is a private detective, and you used to be on the police force till something happened in the past, and now you're working as a private detective, kind of a washed-out private detective. And you start the game off, right, in the sewers, and you're looking for parts to replace so you can actually move around. You need a leg part and a hand part because you've been severely injured because of some incident. And there's some psycho... robotic type thing wearing a cowl and carrying a side that floats around and appears and disappears. And that initial part is really, really annoying because it doesn't tell you anything. It doesn't give you any instructions or anything like that on what to do. You just have to figure it out yourself. And I died like 6 or 7 times before I finally figured out what I was doing. So yeah, once you get your body parts, you have a cat friend and then it goes back in time to kind of how everything started. So the prologue ends, and then it goes into the actual story itself. And you wake up in your bed at your house, still as Rex, and you are confronted by your house robot butler type thing called BBX, who tells you that you need to replace various cybernetic parts in your body, otherwise they're going to wear out. Turns out BBX needs parts as well, so you have to try and find parts for your robot. Meanwhile, you're being pestered by a cat. Can't remember what the cat's name is off the top of my head. Is it Gary or Larry or something like
that? Doesn't matter. It's a little monster. All cats that pester people are.
Yeah. I know it's not Jeff, because Jeff is the name of the alien in Doki Doki Universe, so I know it's not Jeff.
Okay.
But anyway, the cat is pestering you, and the cat belongs to a woman called Mrs. Perry. And this is where kind of everything starts off. This world of this world in Tales of the Neon Sea, this city, is in the middle of an election, and for the first time ever, they have a robot candidate. And there's this tension between robots and humans, and it does kind of play into the whole idea of robots versus humans. Can they coexist or not? Yada, yada, yada. Not going to go into that. The story goes into it a bit more. It does have puzzle elements in there that you have to solve as you're going around, and the puzzles can become increasingly more complex. It also has kind of a Batman Arkham-like investigation mode, so you can investigate crime scenes, and then you can basically put the clock pieces back together, rewind time, and play through the scenario that you've uncovered. And what you basically have to do is navigate through this seemingly simple story that starts off with the death of the cat's owner, Mrs. Perry, who you find by accident because the cat has found her.
Okay.
And it all starts from there. From there, you go on to unusual objects attached to robot brains and various things like that. And it all gets very, very strange.
That'd have been such a better name than what's this called?
Tales of the Neon Sea.
That's a terrible name. Strange Objects Attached to Robot Brains is a much better name.
See, I think it's called Tales of the Neon Sea because the developers are trying to get that kind of 1920s private detective story vibe in something that is effectively a cyberpunk type story. It sounds like a cheap pulp novel. It is a cheap pulp novel. But the reason why I say it's a throwback is because it's a 2D perspective, and it looks like a 2D platform game. It's basically a 2D adventure game, right? Not point and click, just a plain 2D adventure game.
Just to clarify, calling something cheap pulp adventure isn't a compliment. It's about as far away from a compliment as you can get.
It is a cheap pulp adventure. It has all of the hallmarks of a cheap pulp adventure. It's done actually quite well as a cheap pulp adventure in the form of a video game. Better than a lot of the ones that I've seen, right? I wouldn't say it's the best, but it is up there with the better ones. The aesthetic, obviously, it's the cyberpunk aesthetic, which I've seen in all sorts of other things. Not the Cyberpunk 2077 thing. It's nowhere near as sleek as that. This is all pixel art and everything like that. The weird thing is, I kind of prefer Cloudpunk to Tales of the Neon Sea in terms of just the overall vibe the game gives me. I think I preferred Cloudpunk's freedom.
Can I say this? Can we move on from Cyberpunk already?
Yeah. This is the thing. I preferred Cloudpunk's freedom and the ability to move around the city and then go down onto street level and walk around the street.
Yeah, whereas, the whole thing I've got from Cyberpunk is vast open cities, isolated people, lots of red light districts, and lots of crime.
Yeah.
I don't think you can really do that in a place which doesn't have that sort of openness.
See, that's the thing. Tales of the Neon Sea, it's trying to make the environment feel enclosed and claustrophobic, almost like a Blade Runner-esque type vibe.
But and Blade Runner felt massive and open. Both of them.
To a degree, yeah, but when it was on street level, it felt very claustrophobic.
Yes, because it's a street. That's what streets are supposed to be.
And that's what Tales of the Neon Sea is going for. And it kind of achieves that, but it also doesn't. There's a certain thing. You know, colour usage, yeah? When you make something too bright, it becomes almost cartoonish, but when you make it too dark,
It becomes a bit cartoonish as well, honestly.
Yeah, it also becomes cartoonish. That's one of the reasons why I couldn't take Man of Steel seriously, because it was just too dark. The colour-corrected version of Man of Steel...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember you showing me that, yeah.
Yeah, it works so much better. It's so much... You take the story much more seriously in the colour... Just by correcting the colour and making the colour unmuted and less grey.
I mean, look at... It's completely off-topic here. But Invincible, the Amazon Prime series.
Yeah.
Super colourful, and it tells such a unique and complete story.
Yeah.
It doesn't think, moody, so let's have no colour. It's all dark and doom. Let's do it in the CSI thing. The CSI palette. Where New York is grey and Miami is like rainbow.
What was that black and white film that won an Oscar a couple of years ago? The Artist or something like that? Can you imagine Zack Snyder's version of that? It would just be a black screen.
You don't want to invoke the Snyders, Rob. The Snyder fans have gone full crazy.
I don't care about the Snyder fans. I don't care about Zack Snyder. I mean,
and there's this thing on social media now, right, where apparently a movie can't do justice to a full story unless it's 4 hours long. There's people complaining that the Mortal Kombat movie, quotation marks here, is just 2 hours. It can't do the entire gallery of characters justice. Like,
can I just point out, it's Mortal Kombat.
Yes.
It's like the pulpiest of pulp fiction. It is the trashiest of trash fiction. It doesn't even deserve an hour movie, and yet we're getting a 2 hour one. And you know what? I'm going to enjoy every minute of those 2 hours because it looks like they've done justice to the game for a change. Look, all I'm going to say is Tales of the Neon Sea, the reason I say it's a throwback is because it reminds me of games I used to play back in the early 90s, like Beneath the Steel Sky and stuff like that. It's very much that type of game. You don't see that type of game around a lot these days.
There's one game which I think you will absolutely adore, which is coming out soon. I think it's debuting on Games Pass. It's a noir mystery stealth game called Bonehead, and I need to play it now. It looks awesome.
That one, Cyberpunk Ghost Story, I'm planning on playing that next month because I've finally got a copy of that, so I'm going to give that a try, see what I think of it. Tales of the Neon Sea is a perfectly serviceable game. It just feels a bit too old school for some people, that's all.
Right, let's pick this party up and talk about an exciting, cool, invigorating game. Nah, not really. Sorry.
Okay, what are we talking about now?
Shadow of the Tomb Raider. Rise of the Tomb Raider. I liked it, but I would never, ever say that it had a memorable story. I didn't play it that long ago. It was within the last 9 months, I'd say. But start of this, I'm like, who's he? What's going on? What's happening? It needed a previously on Tomb Raider at the beginning of it. Because honestly, I don't know what's happening.
See, when you say, Uzi, what's going on? You just sounded like Lara Croft's grandma.
Yes, I'm happy. I'd happily be Lara Croft's grandma because I'd be loaded, wouldn't I?
But it's just like she's brought some random guy home again. He's like, Uzi, what's he do?
But my point is, the story isn't a strong point of these games. So
no.
I don't know what's going on. It doesn't even care about the story, let's be honest. It's Trinity. Trinity are bad. They're after a thing. Lara Croft won't stop them doing a thing. There we go. Go on, you place.
What does Neo have to say about this?
I don't know, but you got your friend Jonah, who's your cook and your best friend. And yeah, I think the problem here is the reason why I liked Rise of the Tomb Raider was because it made you feel like you were really adventuring and the combat was really, really solid.
Yeah.
What I didn't like about I played the original Tomb Raider, like going back, way back, the original Tomb Raider, 1, 2, and 3. Once it got past that, it started to get a little bit too invested in its own puzzles.
Yeah, and its own supernatural mythos as well. What was it? Tomb Raider, Angel of Darkness, and what was the other one?
Oh, I can't remember. There's been so many, Rob.
I think it was Tomb Raider, Angel of Darkness, and then there was Tomb Raider, Underworld, and then there was a few other things, and then they kind of tried to do a soft reboot of Tomb Raider by remaking the original game for the PlayStation 2, I think.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest. 3? The reason why I don't like this is I'm basically repeating what I'm saying about Ratchet and Clank here. Plays well enough, but it's kind of soulless. I don't care about any of the characters. It doesn't write them in a compelling way. I mean, it's got interesting mechanics, like you can hide in the bushes and you have a muddy face. And you can pull people in the bushes, which just sounds like the most half-assed innuendo.
That's hilarious.
And then when she's come out of the muddy bushes, her face is all messy, but she keeps on walking and she's not got any mud on her face. And you have a fight with a leopard. It gives you a bad back.
That just sounds wrong.
Yeah. But, yeah, I just don't care. It's a free game. It was part of PS Plus a few months back, and I thought, I've got it for free. I may as well give it a go. I've already paid for it. It doesn't cost anything to try. And even then, it's just, there's nothing compelling about it. I don't care about the character. Admittedly, it's given a sort of reality to Lara Croft, which is fun. But at the same time, it's just, there's nothing about it which has any sort of, you know, like a game which, games tend to have like one thing where it says, this is who we are. This is what we're going for. This is what we're going to try and do something new and fresh with. You get me?
Yeah.
Or go back to like an old thing and bring back an old thing that we used to love. Tomb Raider, Shadow of the Tomb Raider it's just another Tomb Raider game. And that sounds horribly cynical, but that's all you can really say. It is just another Tomb Raider game, and there's too many of them.
See, this is the sad thing, right? When the original Tomb Raider games came out on the PlayStation 1, you had Tomb Raider, and then you had Tomb Raider 2, where they added new mechanics to what Lara could do. Then they had Tomb Raider 3, where they added even more mechanics. I think they added the swimming mechanic in 3, was it?
Yeah, 3 is probably the best Tomb Raider there was.
Yeah, and then after that, they did The Last Revelation, which was a bizarre game. I think that was about Lara being a kid again. Then they did Tomb Raider Chronicles, and then Angel of Darkness, and then Legend, and then Anniversary, then Underworld, and then they rebooted it. I think Anniversary was the soft reboot, and then they rebooted it on the PlayStation 3.
Was there a point to you saying all that, or you just because you had the Wikipedia up and you thought you were going to make use of it?
No, I've actually played all of the Tomb Raider games in the main series, and I mean all of them. And now that I had to get it up because I couldn't remember which ones I'd actually played. Turns out I played them all, and I thought there were more games in the series than there actually are. And the thing that puzzles me about Shadow of the Tomb Raider is that. And even in Rise of the Tomb Raider, is that a lot of the stuff that they're doing is stuff that they already did in one of the previous games.
Just another Tomb Raider game.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think Tomb Raider could like vanish for like until like PlayStation 6 and Xbox heebie-jeebie edition. And honestly, I wouldn't really care. I don't think many people would care, really. Because it doesn't really set any house on fire. It's just more of the same.
Yeah. I mean, if they did something where, there was a game where maybe Nathan Drake and Lara Croft, they were both playable characters in
the
game.
That's the funny thing, you know. It was supposed to be effectively a Tomb Raider game, the original Uncharted.
Yeah.
He was supposed to be like a male companion of Lara Croft, but it kind of morphed into its own thing.
Yeah, but I mean, can you imagine if Nathan Drake had to go against Lara Croft in, to basically get the treasure. And the game was basically, you could either play it as Lara Croft or as Nathan Drake. Hmm. And you'd play it from their perspective, and you had to beat Lara to the treasure, or Lara had to beat Nathan Drake to the treasure. That would be an interesting spin on the whole idea.
Yeah, I think Uncharted gets a pass because it values characters so much.
Yeah.
And it's gameplay is kind of secondary to the character and the arcs. Whereas this is just kind of everything is secondary to everything.
Everything secondary to Lara being able to somersault over things and swing off things and I don't know. Suddenly be able to push really heavy blocks in various puzzles. You're like, Lara, you've got skinny arms. Where are you getting the arm strength for this?
Yeah. Tomb Raider's got an awful lot of mileage out of the female character being kind of cute.
Yes. Yes,
and
it has.
And this is another one.
Yes, it has. Oh, right. Okay. I think I'm going to round things off with more
negativity.
No. With some positivity. I'm going to round things off and tidy things up nice and neatly.
Just before you get into that, I don't hate games, right? This is your first time listening. This might come across as me really hating games. I've just had a bad month of bad games. That's all. Bad month of bad games. I'm sorry.
Right. Look, it's time to tidy up, okay? And this could easily be called Marie Kondo or Maria Kondo? The game? Yeah.
If it doesn't bring you joy, get shot of it. That's Marie Kondo.
Yeah. It could literally be called that. And all I can say is hats off to Ben Esposito and Annapurna for releasing this. Donut County, it's a strange short game that is kind of zen. It only lasts about 2 hours, right? But during those 2 hours, it's as if you've tidied up everything in your life nice and neat, and you're free of all the clutter, and you've basically reached a state of calm that you just wouldn't achieve normally. You sit there like, oh, because everything is clean on the screen. There are no random rocks or frogs
it's the video game equivalent of, I can't be bothered tidying up. I'll just kick all of this under the rug.
Yeah, basically, yes. Quite literally is. I mean, there is kind of a story there. Basically, there's two friends, Mira and BK. BK is a raccoon, BK has taken over the local donut shop. And when the problem is that when BK send when they've got an app on everyone's phones that they can order a donut from, but BK doesn't send you a donut, he just sends the haul from the donut.
That's scam.
And the reason why he does that is because he's trying to reach level 10 so he can get himself a quadcopter, and then he can brag about it with everybody. But the problem is, most of the story takes place, I think it was 999 feet below the town, where all of the town has kind of wound up and all of the inhabitants of the town have wound up because of all the holes, because people have been ordering donuts using BK's app.
Okay. Spoilers, so, Rob, come on.
No, this is, like I said, it's about 2 hours long, and I'm not going to go into, it literally does tell you this right at the beginning of the game, so it's not really a spoiler, right? But the thing is, you keep playing the game, not just for the zen-like feeling that you get from cleaning up a level, as in, like, cleaning up everything. Plants, birds, animals, snakes, whatever, they're all in the hole. And you
get a reverse Katamari.
It's kind of a reverse Katamari because you start with a small hole and you end up with a big hole. That sounds really wrong now that I say that a lot.
Hey, well, we've got innuendo in this episode, Rob, you know, so that's fine.
Apologies to anyone who fell for that innuendo. Wasn't intentional. But anyway.
Apologies to anybody who's offended by big holes.
It is kind of the reverse Katamari, and this is going to sound really wrong even more, but it's also about how you can use the hole that you got.
Yeah. I've not helped it.
You haven't helped at all.
Well, that's fine.
I mean, there's bits where, you know, you can basically swallow a campfire, then swallow some coals, and the hole can shoot fire. It's because of you, it's sounding even more wrong now. It was perfectly innocent before you.
So, never play Slime Rancher, because I've got some jokes about that too.
Anyway, Donut County, there's some things about Donut County that are just, the level of creativity that's gone into these aspects of Donut County is just like, it's one of those games that I will go back and play when I'm just feeling down and blue and I just want to while away a couple of hours.
So it's like the Jackie Chan of video games.
It's like the Jackie Chan of video games, yeah. The dialogue in it is really charming and really funny. But I think the really key thing is the Trashopedia. Reading the entries on the Trashopedia makes me chuckle and smile all of the time. Because
so if ever, oh, right, there we go. If ever we're going to do like a documentary mini-series as part of this little family of shows we've got going on, that's its name. It's going to be called Trashopedia. It's a spin-off from News Trash. Sorted. Yeah.
But the Trashopedia is basically everything that falls in the hole gets an entry on the Trashopedia. But the entries are written by BK, and BK is sardonic and willful and really doesn't give a crap about what the object is. He's just going to give his own opinion on what the object is, even if it's not accurate or correct, or possibly even politically correct.
Okay.
And that's what makes the entries really funny.
So you liked it a lot?
Yes. I will say to everybody, have a garbage day.
Screw you, Rob.
The game actually, after you complete each level, the game says, have a garbage day. It gives you a nice little flower motif with it as well.
All right. Okay.
I'm like, okay.
My name is Quentin Flynn. I'm here on The Geek Show. Why? Because I play Raiden in the Metal Gear series. I am Lightning, the Rain Transformed, and I have been transformed by hanging out on this show. So tune in and turn on, you'll love it. The Geek Show, it rocks.
Hello and welcome to News Trash, the weekly edition of news here on The Geek Show, where we look at the past 7 days of what's been happening in the world of video games and have a good old talk about it. And it's been very productive for us these past couple of weeks. I am Rob, and as of I'm joined by the Prob. Hello, Rob.
Joined by the Prob.
The prob. The problem.
I am happy to be the prob. You know, having the in front of your name, it's a statement, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a wrestler who's called Brian Kendrick, but he calls himself the Brian Kendrick. So it gives it a bit more bit more drama, you know.
It gives your name that little bit more oomph. Can you imagine walking into a job interview and introducing yourself like that?
Yeah. Swagger it takes. Absolutely swagger.
I am the Rob.
Yeah. Anyhow, we don't hate PlayStation, because this is going to come up again this week. The news has been very much anti-PlayStation, so get out of the way. We're ambivalent. No, no. We are ambivalent. No. That's all I'm saying at the front.
Okay. We will talk more about that in a bit, okay?
Yes, but we're just putting that, I'm just putting that as a teaser at the front. We are ambivalent.
Right, so moving on, though, follow-up to a story that we did not long ago, which was about loot boxes, right?
Yeah.
The interesting thing about the loot boxes, the report from the University of Plymouth and the University of Wolverhampton, that was requested by the Gamble Aware charity, saying that loot boxes are structurally and psychologically akin to gambling. Now, things have started happening on that front. Brazil, for example, has launched an inquiry to ban loot boxes completely.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's good.
Now, the Brazilian authorities have launched an inquiry aiming to ban loot boxes in their country on the recommendation of the National Association of Children and Adolescent Defense Centers, which, you know, is basically a glorified name for, like, a child protection agency.
Yeah. It's not just children who need protecting, it's people with gambling addiction problems, but still,
yeah,
somebody's doing it. That's the important part.
Now, the thing is, there's an interesting offshoot from that. I think that that's going to be something that, this report is going to get cited all over the place. We know that.
The thing is, momentum is moving in a way that's anti-loot boxes now, so I think it's only a matter of time before the vice really tightens on that economic model for gaming.
Interesting you say that, because that leads me on to... It's an interesting opinion piece that Rob Fahey, one of the contributing editors for GameIndustry.biz, he's done a piece on Apple and Google suggesting that they... because they've already suggested that they... they've already indicated a desire to move their platforms away from the free-for-all monetization model, maybe make it more structured, have more rules and regulations. And he's suggesting that they could pull the plug on the whole mobile games monetization, because it is a free-for-all at the moment. It's basically, this is where the loot box model came from. It came from mobile game platform monetization.
Mobile game monetization is borderline evil. The one where it says you can play this game for an hour and then you run out of stamina, but if you want to play for longer, you got to pay.
Yes, that's the thing.
It's a really nasty strategy for gameplay.
And that's the thing. Those things need to be much more regulated because they involve money. And now that this is happening with loot boxes, it's only a matter of time before people turn their eyes towards the mobile games market and say, hey, hang about.
Yeah, it's all interlinked. The interesting thing here is, did you for a long time get the feeling that the video game industry was kind of going along unregulated, like it was master of the world and nothing could touch it?
Oh, God, yes.
Did you get that impression from it? It wasn't just me, was it?
No, the reason why you felt like that was because that was quite literally what was happening, and I've been saying for years there needs to be more regulation in video games. Right. I know people are going out there are going to disagree with me, right? They're going to disagree with me and with what I've got to say here. But here's the thing, right? When you have an industry as heavily unregulated as the video games industry has historically been, then you basically leave the door open for all sorts of things to be done, right?
All sorts of piranhas and vultures to make their millions.
Let me give you an example of the things that can happen when in an unregulated video games industry, right? 6 days to Fallujah.
You don't need to say anything else.
There's an actual story here, right?
Yeah, it's a game that shouldn't exist, but yeah, go on.
Yeah, one of the biggest Muslim advocacy groups in America, in the USA, have called on Sony, Microsoft, and Valve to not distribute 6 days of Fallujah. They've described the game as an Arab murder simulator that will only normalize violence against Muslims in America and around the world.
Just to clarify this, it's basically said in the promotional piece that American soldiers don't make mistakes and they're always right as soon as they enter a building. So, you know, human cost be damned. And it's also, that's what one of the developers said. And it's also randomly generating these towns and randomly generating these civilians. So it's completely dehumanizing these people.
Yeah.
Who live in Iraq and live in Syria and live in places like this. So yeah, the fact that this game was allowed to happen, you know.
Here's the thing. The gaming, according to according to the Council on American Islamic Relations, right? The gaming industry must stop dehumanizing Muslims. And this is a general call for the industry itself to stop doing this, which I actually agree with. Having faceless mooks is one thing, but when you have games that constantly describe Arabs as terrorists, which a lot of games have, historically, the gaming industry must stop dehumanizing Muslims. Video games like 6 Days in Fallujah only serve to glorify violence that took the lives of hundreds of Iraqi civilians, justify the Iraq War, which was illegal, and reinforce anti-Muslim sentiment at a time when anti-Muslim bigotry continues to threaten human life, which are all very valid points. Yeah. Anyway, moving on. We're going to continue on. We've still got a lot of news to plow through. But yeah, like I said, things like that can happen in an unregulated video games industry.
Yeah.
Other things that can happen in an unregulated video games industry are the ESA confirming that E3 2021 is going to be free and online only.
You say that, but they did try and put things behind a paywall.
I was about to say, that was right after they got a massive backlash because of the suggestion that they might put things behind a paywall.
Yeah, honestly, I don't think... This just last year basically made the case that events like E3 don't need to happen. That digital is cheaper, digital is more accessible, and they can control the conversation. Like, the developers of games, the publishers of games can control the conversation and how something is talked about.
At
the same time, there was too bloody much of it.
Yeah.
I couldn't keep up with Jeff Keighley's Summer Game Fest. There was just way too much of it. So... Yeah. I'm happy that E3 is back in a way that it can sort of compact all of these things into one weekend or whatever it is. But at the same time, with it being digital, there's no reason for anybody to be involved. There's no reason for any of these companies that have put their name on the sheet that they're going to be there to give their big announcements. They save their big announcements so when they want to control the conversation. I can see this effectively just being in the middle of the road, sort of indie showcase or smaller game showcase. It's not going to... This is my opinion. Whether I'm right or not remains
to be seen. I was about to poke holes in what you just said. Literally about to poke holes in what you just said.
Yeah, but the thing is, that's the thing, isn't it? All these games companies had a year of controlling the conversation, of making everything about them rather than sharing the spotlight. And in a gear industry of super competitiveness right now, where the mind share is pretty much equal between Xbox and Microsoft, they need to have these opportunities to have most of the mind share. So I don't think this is going to be an old-fashioned E3 event with all of the big surprises and all the big announcements.
That can't happen. We know that. But when you're talking about, you know, it's going to be reduced to like an indie showcase, I don't think that's going to happen either.
With like Microsoft, it's going to be a smaller scale game showcase.
Let me explain. E3 is going to be between the 12th and 15th of June. Basically, several major companies have already thrown their support and are backing E3 as a digital-only thing. And I think part of that is because it's the ESA that are in charge of E3.
Have you heard about some of the things that the ESA did when it was an event? It was, 75,000 to have a carpet in your booth?
Yeah, we're not going to go into that. Nintendo, Xbox, Capcom, Konami, Ubisoft, Take-Two, Warner Brothers, and Koch Media they're basically confirmed that they will be part of E3.
Let's just pause on that. Konami confirmed that they're going to be part of it?
Yeah.
That's interesting, because Konami have kind of been vacant from games for a very long time, so that has me interested. More than the return of E3, I'll be perfectly honest.
Yeah, the thing that's noticeable, though, from that list is that EA and PlayStation have yet to confirm whether they're going to be part of E3.
PlayStation 1. And again, PlayStation don't want to say anything these days. They're just so very, very silent. But EA have kind of made their own thing, EA Play, but so have Ubisoft, Ubisoft Forward, so have Microsoft, their showcases. Everybody has. But the only benefit I can see to this is that companies want everything to be compact in that sort of WrestleMania weekend, the Super Bowl weekend, the FA Cup final weekend, whatever your, like, sporting analogy you want. But at the end of the day, it can't be completely controlled in the same way that it was when E3 was the only game in town.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, companies can have their E3 conference, but they can also go ahead and do other things all over the place.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is the thing.
Which, just on this last point, which completely undermines the value of E3. But I'm okay with that.
See, this is the thing. ESA, I think, have leveraged a lot of stuff to get this E3 off the ground. I think they have leveraged a lot of stuff to get this E3 off the ground, because at one point it might not have happened. Especially with Sony and Square and Microsoft doing their own showcases already this year. After
this is a do or die for E3.
Exactly. I think they've thrown a lot of eggs into this basket this year to make this happen. Yeah.
And I don't think they don't have remotely close to the same level of power that they used to. So.
Exactly. We did mention Sony, and obviously we are at that point, Rob. So.
Yeah, so I've got to stress again. We don't hate Sony, we don't hate Microsoft, we don't hate Nintendo. We are ambivalent about them all. We like all of them as much as we dislike all of them.
We'll play games on all of the platforms, but this report by Jason Schreier on Bloomberg.
Schreier,
however you pronounce his name. I've seen responses to this report, and I've seen a lot of pro PlayStation responses to this report, where they tried to downplay the angle and the contextualization that he's put on.
Well, let's just drop some bullet points, because there's a lot in this article, isn't there?
Yes, there's a lot in it.
Well, number one is there's a company that was set up in San Diego, and they were rumored to be making their own game, and it was forever. Like, the question was, what are they going to make, when they're going to announce it? And then this article, Jason Schreier talked to somebody who was a former head and now left, and that person basically said they tried to poach the idea of an original game. It was shot down. They tried to poach the idea of Uncharted 1 remake of PS5. It was shot down.
I don't think poach is the right word. Broach, maybe.
Is that what I said?
You said poach both times.
Sorry, broach is what I meant. Yeah. And they finally settled on basically a PS5 remake of the original Last of Us, which that fact alone is kind of pointless because it's had a PS4 remake. So is this going to be basically Sony's Grand Theft Auto 5? But essentially what it comes down to with that is, even though this company was hungry to make something, they were shot down every single level by the heads of Sony.
Yeah, they were in particular shut down by Herman Hulst, the former head of Guerrilla Games.
And now Worldwide Head Studio. And also Bend Studios wanted to make a sequel to Days Gone, but that was shut down, so...
Yeah, I mean, the company that Rob's on about is Sony's Visual Arts Service Group. They were headed by Michael Mumbauer, and they basically were... You know, The Last of Us remake for PlayStation 5. You know, you got the Naughty Dog apologists jumping on board with this, saying, you know, obviously you need Naughty Dog involved. You don't understand; they're the ones who made the game. They're the only ones who can understand how this game should be made. What people fail to realize is that the Visual Arts Service Group were also one of the companies that worked on the original Last of Us game, doing a lot of the legwork for the Last of Us.
There was a comment in the article as well how basically it was implied heavily that Sony Studio Japan was shut down because they don't want to put money behind games that are, in quotation marks, only successful in Japan.
Which is a massive kick in the teeth for the Japanese market.
Which... when you see all the news stories of this person's left Studio Japan, that person's left Studio Japan, another person's left Studio Japan and set up this new studio called Bokeh Studios, it really does highlight Another phrase in the article, which I don't 100% stand by because they are quite open with setting up new franchises, but clearly not as open-minded as they can be. But anyway, yeah, that phrase was, Sony is becoming increasingly risk-averse.
Sony have been, thing is, like any big corporation, they are risk-averse.
And increasingly conservative.
Yes, they are increasingly conservative. Right. In normal terms, in normal layman's terms, let me see if I can explain this. Right, okay, right. This isn't a hard and fast rule, but in general, you'll see that this is the case, right? The richer you are, the more conservative you become.
Yeah, that's kind of true.
That's a fundamental truth that affects, you know, individuals, families, businesses, doesn't matter. And Sony are one of the richest companies in the world.
No, they're not.
Right? One of.
Not even close, Rob.
Are they not even close?
Not even close.
Are they not in the top 20?
Nope.
Really?
Nope. I think they're worth $97 billion. Microsoft is worth over $1 trillion.
Yeah, I am.
Apple's worth over $1 trillion. Amazon's worth over $1 trillion. So, end of the day, Sony aren't that big.
So, they should be. They should.
They're not that big.
I will look into this, but
they're not one of the top 20 companies on the planet. Nowhere near. No way, Jose. No way, Jose.
I thought they would be.
But it's still, the point is, success has great. Because a certain formula works. I can understand why Sony would have this idea that, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But at the same time, the industry is changing, so this increasingly conservative angle that has came up in this article is starting to explain a lot as far as the figureheads of the company, as far as all of these stories happening and they're having no comment passed on it, as far as Games Pass being a huge driver to people deciding to get an Xbox ahead of a PlayStation and them not doing anything about it. So the conservative angle is really running through Sony right now, and they really need to sort of nip this in the bud, because as much as we talk about this as dangerous stuff that Sony is really damaging themselves, no real damage is being caused yet, but they really need to do something before real damage is caused.
See, I disagree. I think real damage has already been caused. Okay,
it's not far
in terms
off
of stock. Yeah. No, I think it's already been caused in terms of stock prices, in terms of shareholders. Sony, you know, the rumor continues that Sony are developing their own version of Game Pass, which we've known for a while, right? And that's one of the things that. A lot of the pro-Sony sector of the fan base are banking on, they're banking on that happening. Now, I would like to see more concrete details on what they have planned, because even on the back of this article by Jason Schreier, on the back of this article, because the article is, it focuses on the fact that Sony want blockbusters. They want the PlayStation 5 to be a blockbuster machine, which is, I actually do agree with. I do agree with the idea, and I think Sony have made themselves an inhospitable place. PlayStation has become an inhospitable place for indie developers. When you look at, Video Game Chronicle have done two articles about the digital-only games that will disappear when the Sony, when the PlayStation closes its stores. And of those, there are 138 games that apparently, according to their research, won't be available anywhere after the stores close.
That number,
the majority
would be
of those,
a ton higher if it wasn't for PlayStation now as well.
Yeah, the majority of those games that will disappear completely are indie games. And the thing is, I've actually looked into this whole. Sony have basically said you can download the games, right? And they put on their FAQ, how do I access my owned games? You can download your owned content onto your PS3, PS Vita, and PSP devices by accessing the download list on the respective device. Now, here's the thing, right? This is just teeny tiny bit of lack of foresight here. The download list on the PlayStation 3, where was it, Rob? Do you remember?
On the Star.
Yeah, it was the same on the PSP and on the PS Vita. So in order to get to the download list on that device, you have to go to the PlayStation Store on that device, which is no longer accessible on that device.
Well, what?
To access the to access the download list.
I'm trying to remain like platform agnostic here, and he's really pushing it to one side. So it's just that's a lot of bad PlayStation news we've had. It's the latest in a series of bad days for PlayStation. So
it's a lot of bad press for the PlayStation at the moment. Maybe there'll be some good press. Maybe Omen Jalili will come out and belly dance.
He really likes that joke, but yeah, they'll have some big announcement that'll excite fans.
Yeah, it all seems to be really, really negative news this week because Counter-Strike Go, CSGO, is under investigation by the Esports Integrity Commission and the FBI.
Oh, snap.
Basically, they're investigating match-fixing in CSGO. And this is kind of on the back of Tencent and the Chinese authorities busting that massive cheating ring in China. You know, that was, you know, where they reckon it was like $76 million they'd made.
Hmm.
And this is another cheating ring that's being investigated. They haven't put any actual figures on how much they're making, but. The Esports Integrity Commission recently issued 35 bans to Australian CSGO players for betting on their own matches, and apparently there's an organised match-fixing group in America that involves a relatively small but significant group of players.
I mean, this just is an illustration of how much video games culture has grown over the years, that the FBI will be involved in cracking down on illicit tactics and illicit money-making from certain titles.
But again, we come back to this whole idea of an unregulated video games industry.
Yeah, it's got away scot-free with way too much or way too long. And it feels like now that reality is really sinking into the video game industry.
Yeah. Speaking of unregulated, Twitch.
Which has a lot of fans and it has a lot of nurses.
Yeah, it has a lot of fans and a lot of nurses. They set a new monthly viewership record in March with 2.06 billion hours watched, according to Scream Elements analytics partner Rainmaker.gg, and that's a lot of people watching people play things.
That's not what Twitch surely is. Twitch has all sorts of things going on. It's a real wide community. But I want to ask, use this story just to stop a second. Ask this question: why do people watch other people play video games?
Yeah, why not play the game yourself?
Let's not answer it. I just want the people who watch this to answer that question. Comment below. Why do people watch people play video games? I want no colour on that opinion. I just want somebody who does it to tell me below in the comments, please.
Okay.
So, down below.
Anyway, Grand Theft Auto 5 was the most watched game for March, with 181 million hours, followed by League of Legends and Fortnite, Call of Duty Warzone, and Minecraft. So that's
the GTA is really up there, because that's an eight-year-old game now.
Yeah, and it's the first time that Grand Theft Auto 5 has topped the list with of the most watched games on Twitch. But they also, Stream Elements have also identified a growing interest in a particular type of stream.
Go on.
Apparently, Twitch users have spent over 2 million hours watching streamers sleep, and a single streamer has accounted for most of those.
Yeah, this is... we used to have, like, the Geek Show, that's the name of who we are. That used to be a show as well.
Yeah.
And that was the show in which, at the end anyway, where we talked about all sorts of weird things happening in the news, what raccoons are up to this week, and what Elon Musk is. It's amazing how many of those things crossed over. And this feels like a story from that, because in that there was a story about how somebody, a Korean guy, just watched...
Korean kid, studying.
Thousands of viewers, and he was just doing it for hours on end.
Yeah, he'd spend an hour a day, he'd record himself for an hour a day studying, and he'd sit there with the camera just behind him, and all you'd see is him studying for an hour. And he had something like 500,000 views. How are you doing this? What kind of magic are you using?
Yeah.
There's literally nothing going on.
So, yeah, it's the same with this. I don't understand it, but it's not the sort of thing you try to understand. It's just the sort of the weird ASMR community on the internet is just bonkers.
Yeah.
But yeah, honestly, that comment, that thing I said before, comment below why people watch people playing video games. I want to understand this. Genuinely.
Yeah. Developer Slow Bros have made a, well, they are in the process of making a handmade space adventure called Harold Halibut. And they've released another, they've released a story trailer for the game, which is simply called Harold Halibut.
Let's just, context here, it was first like trailed in 2017 with a teaser trailer, yeah, which basically had like Harold, the title of the character, cleaning down a wall. It had a very much a mystery tone to it. It was narrated. But the big elephant in the room was it wasn't animated in a way which any game really has been before. The visual look of the game was as if it's been hand animated with clay. Like, yeah, like a movie, like a Wallace and Gromit movie, but it's a video game.
The animation, the art style, I think it's one of the most striking games I've seen for a long, long time.
It reminds me of Cuphead in the regard of when you see a video game which genuinely looks like one of a kind, you realise how much all games look the same.
Yeah, exactly.
And Cuphead this, and Harold Halibut, so striking, so stunning.
Exactly. They stand out so much. And the thing is, I think they've actually hand-animated pretty much all of it.
Yeah, to an extent. Because I mean, I don't know how that works when you hand-animate and animate by code and like software manipulation. It's really confusing.
I think what they've done the hand animation first and then done the code to fit the hand animation rather than the other way around.
Yeah.
So when basically they've animated for as many different scenarios as they can come up with, and then they'll basically round it out by fitting in other scenarios that they couldn't think of in the first place.
Yeah.
So they've got the code to fit all of it. And I think that's the way they've been doing it. But
the second trailer is a gameplay trailer. It doesn't really show much gameplay. It's just sort of pondering.
Well, it's more of a
wandering around the world. It's sort of an expanded gameplay story trailer.
Harold is a young lab assistant who is forced to live his life on board a city-sized spaceship submerged beneath an alien ocean, 250 years after it fled Earth to preserve the human race. And most of the ship's inhabitants have reconciled their lives to a life lived aboard the sunken ship. The lead scientist still works tirelessly to find a way for the ship to leave the planet and find a new, drier home. To me, this feels, you know, the story trailer feels a little bit Psychonauts, a little bit Monkey Island, a little bit of the quirkiness and the humour of that, mixed together with some of the point-and-click adventureness that you get in games like Broken Sword and stuff like that.
Yeah, end of the day, I'm really looking forward to it, but there's not a lot known about it because it's still on both trailers. It says coming soon, and it'll have a website, so I don't know what platform it's coming to. I don't know when it's coming out, but it's a game to keep an eye on. And
Definitely.
Going forward, this is what we're going to be doing. It doesn't necessarily need to be like a big AAA trailer or some new cool trailer. It's just something that we find interesting that we're going to highlight at the back end of every episode of News Trash going forward. That's just sort of a nice little note to end on, especially this week when all the news is bad. We need to sort of have a little uplift at the back end of the show and make things a little bit more positive. But yes, that is it for this week's edition of News Trash. If you're listening on the podcast provider, thank you very much. Please do subscribe, please do share us, please do give us a rating because it helps us stand out in an incredibly, 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 incredibly crowded marketplace. But, yeah, also there's a Patreon. Check that out. But for now, we'll be back, I think, next week. Just this has been a very hectic past week with lots of content and video game stuff.
Yeah.
It's just news trash next week. So until next time, thank you very much for listening and watching.
Bye.